Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I am doing
good.
Well.
All right.
Doing well.
Yes.
So is Pfizer.
Oh, yeah, they're doing well.
Pfizer is doing well, and so we have to talk about them. We like success.
Yeah.
You know, out there in the free enterprise system and providing good services to the people and the people voting on the success of the company by buying what they produce.
That's
right. This is just a wonderful example. Uh-huh. I better be careful. Somebody might listen
to
this. Well, what's he talking about? Well, what we're really talking about is the ridiculous system that we have today. The report just came out this morning about Pfizer. Pfizer's doing pretty well, you know, and their stock went up and they're making good profits. They're active with their lobbyist organization. They don't want any competition.
Yeah.
But they're concerned, you know, no matter how much money they have in the bank now, no matter how much control and plants that they have in the government, they want to secure long-term cash flow, and that's what this is about today. Zero Hedge, of course, good researchers had an article today. It says, Pfizer expects vaccine will be durable revenue stream. That sounds like let the cash flow. And I was making fun, but it shouldn't even be funny. It should be serious. That where does the cash flow come? When you think of the vaccines, who paid for the research? The people paid for the research. Who distributes it? People who are going to make money. Has it been scientifically proven to be a great vaccine? No, it hasn't. But it goes on and on of the benefit. And right now, they want to make sure. But how can they do it? You know, they've given everybody shots. The pandemic doesn't exist, and they don't know what to do, so they have to create a problem. And this is so ironic. So their big thing now is to be able to get support behind giving children from 2 to 11 shots.
Yeah.
And they're liable to get it. You know, there are people, just last night I saw a TV program with grade school kids, 8 and 10 years old, still wearing masks in school and all this. So they want to be able to give these shots because it's so effective. What do you give shots to people who don't even get sick?
Yeah, yeah.
They say, oh no, there's no, essentially no side effects. But I tell you what, in that group, if you compare giving shots to all the kids and looking at the side effects, they'll have percentage-wise more side effects than the older people, you know, because they're more immune. But but anyway, they're anxiously give that. And do you think Pfizer really care who pays for this as long as the money comes to the bank, their bank?
Yeah.
And that is just a terrible thing. I think it's terrible in many ways to start off with. I think it's terrible medicine, and we've been talking about that for a long time. But the lobbying system represents the political system we have, and Pfizer is very, very busy there trying to get the approval. At the same time they want approval to give these shots to the kids, they want to make sure their intellectual property is protected, and because it's their property, it's their ownership of this vaccine, and it was not paid for by the Pfizer. It was paid for, you know, by the taxpayers. So this is a pretty good example to show how terrible the system is that we have. And if you want to talk about crony capitalism, or people want to know about it, they ought to just look into crony capitalism. And it's the same saying as a corporatism. It's corporations. Even yesterday on the conservative television station, they were condemning, you know, even corporations are bad. Like, astounding, they found something, you know. But the corporation, you know, it's there's nothing that should be prohibited about that, but they should get nothing. No special privileges from the government. And this is what this is. This is corporatism at its worst, and it's big money, and they can be rather ruthless. They're not talking about $100 million or a couple billion dollars. They're talking about getting these appropriations of thousands and billions of dollars, even up into trillions of dollars, to keep this whole system going.
And as you say, it was developed with public money, of course, U.S. government money, but also I think the German government with BioNTech put in a bunch of money. It's using a technology, the mRNA technology, that was patented by a U.S. government-funded entity. So deeply, its roots are deeply into the public trough. yet somehow the leaves and the flowers on top, the profits are privatized. But according to this article, as you say, on Zero Hedge, and we appreciate their work on this, they're close to receiving emergency use permission for the 2 to 11-year-old kids, and they expect the 12 to 15-year-olds to get it by next week. This shot is on track to be their most profitable product ever out there on the line right now. Here's what they want to do, though. Here's what the future. This is why the durable revenue stream is important. They want to expand the use of the mRNA technology, which is still, as you say, experimental, i.e. not scientifically proven to be effective by definition. They want to use it and expand it into other things, other shots, the yearly flu shot and other things. And they also have floated the idea, you're going to love this, talk about guaranteed big money, yearly annual booster shots for the COVID. Even though viruses, you know, they do die out. No. You got to go back every year and get that shot. There's another $20 for each person in the pocket of Pfizer. But Barack Obama reminded us this shot is free.
Oh,
so we shouldn't worry about it.
And even some have predicted that it might be more than one single shot every year.
Yeah.
They might at the beginning, you need three shots. So this this is the setup that they have. And unfortunately, they're in a powerful position. But I think I read one place where Biden was a little bit uncertain on exactly what to do and what the rules should be, which means absolutely nothing, because where's the evidence that Democrats are much different than Republicans when it comes to crony capitalism?
Yeah.
You know, and it's sort of like, you know, it's interesting. There's two military industrial complex, the medical industrial complex.
Yeah.
And where are these drugs made and how many people involved? Well, the military is especially distributed to just about every state, but every state has something in there that, you know, distribution, and they get subsidies and they get payments and all this. So this is offered up as an enticement for people to join in, and that's exactly what people want to do. And I think I mentioned this the other day, but I had one individual libertarian say, you know, I don't believe in it, I don't know all this, impacted this practicality, but I got to do it, you know, I'm going to lose my job and this sort of thing. So it's a real tragedy. And, you know, in the old days, they might have wanted to do a little bit more testing on a vaccine like this, but why should people trust the testers?
Yeah.
You know, they make them come out. They had the PCR test, and
it's junk.
and now it's discredited, and yet they're still using them. But that's what they're going to use for. Well, we'll change the numbers. We can make it. We can make anything we want come out. Give them a shot, and nobody gets the disease. Oh, well, when we had to prove that the pandemic was going to destroy the world, we'll run that test until kingdom comes, because we're going to find out everybody who might get it someday. And then they find out, and they're admitting it now.
Yeah.
You know, openly. Even reputable people saying they shouldn't even do more than 28 cycles.
Yeah.
And yet they were doing up to 40 cycles, just searching and searching for evidence to get this whole operation going
off the ground. It's just so weird, because if, you know, our position has been, if you want to take the shot, it's up to you. But why is there billions of dollars in marketing and government pushing and Barack Obama pleading with us to go in there? It's just weird. If it was something that you really believe saved your life, you'd go get it, and you should go get it. Let's put up that first clip just to show you where we got it from, in case you want to go look at it for yourself. The data released by Pfizer, of course, this is in the article, shows that the shot is 100% effective at preventing serious symptoms of the disease. But what if kids don't get it anyway? Then how can you say it's 100% effective? And this is Exhibit A in our case. Let's look at this next one. And we've put this up before, Dr. Paul. This is from the CDC, so you can't accuse us of anything. Kids from 0 to 17 years over the past year, 38,251 died from all causes. Kids 0 to 17, 38,000. Of those, children are dying of COVID, 238. Just 238. And we don't know anything about serious comorbidities that may be at play here or what have you. So the question is, how can you measure that it's 100% successful if the data, CDC data itself says the kids aren't getting it, you know, kids aren't getting it.
This whole thing, the side effects from the vaccine is what they should be more concerned about. But then they're in denial, or purposely so.
Yeah.
It's perfectly safe and it's recited. But if you come up and suggest there may be a problem, then you're some type of a conspiracy person.
Yeah.
It's ongoing. More people are waking up. More people are resisting it, but there's still a lot of people who cannot buck the system at all. Sometimes it's because they're scared and want to be sure that they're not going to get the disease, and they don't look into the side effect. And others do it just to save their job, going on. But this is terrible if they're willing to do this with kids.
Yeah.
This is child abuse at its worst, we'll do it to the kids and we'll see how they do, and we'll see if they need a shot every 6 months, every year, or every 2 years or whatever. But it's the money that drives it, and that is tragic. It's so far removed from how we understand the market works from an Austrian economic viewpoint that is so much different. This has nothing to do with freedom of choice. This has to do with political power and lobbying efforts and politicians who want to get it, and some petty politicians at local levels that all of a sudden, boy, we can write executive orders now.
Yeah.
We have more power now than we've ever had. We're going to see more people starting to resist that, and they should. They should resist it. And the meetings are still available. You know, if you're tired of your school board and they pretend that they're open to the public, and if there's enough people going there and saying enough is enough, let our kids go to school and let our kids go to the ball game and quit testing it on there. If there's hardly any chance of them getting COVID, why are you really pushing this hard? And then they'll get to the point where, oh, well, we're not going to force it. It'll be up to the parents. But then they'll intimidate the parents.
Yeah.
And the parents will say, boy, I can't take a risk. What if I don't give them the shot and the kid gets sick?
Yeah.
So it's a propaganda tool that they use to embarrass people if they don't go along with the schemes that they have.
And you mentioned afraid and fear. Fear is such a powerful driver, as you know, Dr. Paul, because it leads you to do things that you would not otherwise do, like calm down and make a rational decision. This may be a very good decision for some people to take one of these shots. We don't know. We're not the experts on this. But fear causes people to act sometimes against their own self-interest. But fear is exactly what they're selling. And let's go to this next clip, which I saw this morning on Twitter. This is exactly how they use fear. Remember this? 34 days ago. This is March 29th. Breaking: CDC Director Rochelle Walensky warns that she feels, quote, impending doom with COVID case trajectory. Quote, right now I'm scared. 34 days ago, and if you look at the chart in the U.S., and I had it, but I don't have it here. If you look at it, here's what COVID did in this 34 days that she's terrified. It went like this. there are some places, the lockdown states, where it's not going down as quickly. But so you wonder, how is it that the state and the so-called private companies like Pfizer seem to be in such perfect harmony? Well, put up that additional clip that I sent later back there. Here's one suggestion I might make to say why they work so well together and so closely together, seemingly in harmony, if we have that additional clip. Look at this, Open Secrets. They looked into how much Pfizer spends on lobbying. Here's what they spent in 2019. $11 million. It doesn't sound like a lot, especially when you're talking about billions and billions of dollars in revenue. That's a pretty good investment. I would put a couple of dollars into a scheme like that, right? Yeah.
No, I think so. But it is, to me, amazing how universal this sentiment is, how they can galvanize people into this fear. And that's what has made them so successful, is they've been able to. So they have to control a lot in the media, and it's a complex thing. The media isn't the three major networks. The media is a lot more. It's social network and this movement, which is very, very powerful and not all that easy to completely comprehend. And that is the cancel position that it's social pressures and more fear,
Yeah.
But put more fear and cause people to, you know, just panic over this, and they go along with it. And the corporations and the corporations go along because, you know, you say, well, why would they do things that are hurting their bottom line? Well, my suspicion is, and I'll be talking more about this later, is that the penalty can come through finances. You know, how they deal with their banks and their politicians and their regulatory system. So they have more than just their bottom line. You know, because it made no sense for the owner of a baseball team to lock people out when they had no proof that there was a great danger. And of course, the thing that we used the other day, which is a fantastic example, was 1957.
Yeah.
You know, tens, if not 50,000 people on the beach, and the pandemic or the environment there was much worse, and people did get sick, but they didn't get hysterical, and they didn't get moved in the basis of fear. It wasn't such a powerful political tool. I think at that time, the conditions were different. They were trying to calm people so that they didn't panic and kill each other.
Yeah.
But now, when you look at it, we've mentioned it so often, is lockdown. Look how many people have died from the lockdown.
Yeah.
You know,
yes.
more than the people, especially in the younger age, and they died, you know, from the virus.
Yeah, but that you're not allowed to talk about that. I wanted to throw one other thing up because I know this is something you've talked about, and this caught me this morning. We can put up that next clip. It's from RT. It's an op-ed in RT, and it's otherwise not that important other than the fact, and we do have some allies among progressives when it comes to crony capitalism and corporatism. They do tend to share our views on this, but this is a bad article. But it's also a good teaching opportunity for you, Dr. Paul, because you're so good at it. Here's Radley Blankenship. He wrote an op-ed piece for RT. Pfizer's obscene $900 million profit from its COVID vaccine in just 3 months proves that capitalism and public health are bad bedfellows. So here is Bradley, I guess his name is, saying that it's all capitalism's fault.
Yeah, and that is important because under the today's circumstances, capitalism is equated to you know, ethical free market economics, and people are honest and this sort of thing. So anything that goes badly, then they say, well, see, we let you guys try this freedom markets and libertarianism, and look at what has happened. Well, it's all fake, because the concept that we have now is corporatism. It favors the big corporations, and the Pfizer groups get very wealthy, but they're not lonely people.
Yeah.
And you'd think, well, in this issue, Republicans are more for business people. They're probably the ones who commit this, you know, crime. But it turns out that the Democrats are every bit as bad, if not as sometimes worse.
Yeah.
I mean, the current events are doing this, and you know, this wokeism and everything, and they punish people. But the real danger is that if we don't straighten out the terms and we see this failure, who benefits the most? The people who are promoting Marxism.
Yeah.
You know, that is their theme. Look how horrible this is. And they're no more principled than anybody else. They're not principled utilitarians, or they're not principled people who are humanitarians and want to help people. They're wanting to help themselves. But politically, they can use this and say, look how terrible this is. And it gives freedom a bad reputation. And our goal, of course, here is to sort all this out and let people know, you know, what a free market is really like and why it is beneficial to individuals and the people who produce. And there's only one thing in a free society where you really emphasize pure democracy, and that's when you spend your money. You know, it used to be said every penny you spend is a vote for or against a product.
Yeah.
But now what happens if a company does poorly, like, you know, when they have a pandemic or something, the people who get bailed out are the ones who had the most inept business group. But in a free market, the consumer is very powerful. It's not labor unions, it's not profiteers in corporation. The consumer should be king, and they should be able to have free choices completely and totally. And of course, neither side, whether it's labor or business, they shouldn't have any special benefits.
Well, here's a tip to Bradley. You wrote this piece, and anyone who read it, go to Mises.org, M-I-S-E-S.org, learn a little bit about economics, and then get back to us. Well, here's the question. Why are we seemingly so lily-livered now compared to 1957? Why is it we are so weak and terrified, you know? And I would suggest it's kind of the everyone gets a trophy mentality where you're not allowed to have anyone unequal. If anyone's a little better than someone else, you got to smash him down. And if anyone is just not good at something, you got to raise him up. You know, it's like when I tried to play basketball when I was in junior high, the coach said, you know, this sport really probably isn't for you, you know, because I was short.
Yeah, I think it is part of the system. I think culturally we moved in that direction. The progressives are like this, and they pretend they care about everybody and everything has to be perfectly equal. But I think there's one other factor, and I've talked about it before, and that is the country's in a stage of bankruptcy that they don't admit to. Yeah. It's a financial bankruptcy, and people who are further behind on what they're doing, and their finances are shakier than they'll admit because, well, we had a bad year, but I did better than ever. You know, I kept getting these checks from the government.
It was magic.
So, and it won't cost anything. So it sort of got padded over. But I think deep down inside, people know there's something seriously wrong, you know, with the economic system. Because there was a statistic out, I think even this morning, that when you look at the unemployment, and they say, oh, everything's doing better, the markets are up and everything, but they're nowhere close to where things were before the so-called pandemic. Hit. So this is also, I think people are very disgusted. There are still some people who are very attuned to moral standards, and they have ethical and spiritual beliefs. And it was said that this was a powerful weapon or effort in this country, and the founders understood it and said that is what is necessary to maintain order. But I think it's very evident when you look at this crazy stuff going on and how they're treating the kids, and you don't even know, you might get, you if you don't say, if you say he and she, you might lose your job or something. I mean, the whole thing is crazy. So people they don't have any foundation. I think they're upset about this and they're more fearful. But I think this stuff that I'm talking about is suppressed. Yeah. They suppress the financial because there's so much bailing out. But eventually the bailout is a total bust because all the bailout is coming from borrowed money. Yeah. And when the borrowed money is there and monetized, eventually prices go up. We've already started talking about prices are going up, yeah. And that means that means incomes are going down. But people aren't going to look at it and say, "Oh, my income just went down 10% last year."
Yeah.
They don't say that.
Yeah.
Why didn't they raise my salary 10%? You know, they said there's not enough money here, so the government should send me more money. And that's essentially what they've done. But I think subtly, the people know exactly that we have a moral crisis and we have a financial crisis, and they're just limping along, and it leads to confusion, and they're easily enticed to being very fearful because in some ways they ought to have a little bit of fear, but it has to be a little bit done on some common sense.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't need to be overly fearful about coronavirus and go nuts over that versus being concerned about the ethical and moral and economic standards that we have and the type of policies we have in Washington. I think you know, Republicans and Democrats are guilty of so much, but you know, people don't trust the government anymore. In a way, that's good, but it's also fearful. So in spite of these problems going on, I think deep down inside, there's a lot of concern about what next year will be like.
Yeah, I was just reading that the soaring lumber prices are adding $35,000 to the cost of a house.
So yeah.
That's not inflation.
Right.
Well, here's part of the other reason, I think, why, you know, we've got so many problems. Just put up this next clip. Talk about this really quick. We're getting close to our closing time, but put up this next one if you can. This is from Reason Magazine. We got it by way of Zero Hedge. In the name of equity, California will discourage students who are gifted at math. I know that sounds crazy. It sounds like something out of the film Idiocracy, but it's actually true. And let's look at this next clip. I pulled a couple of clips out of it, Dr. Paul, to look at. This is part of California's suggested program on mathematics. All students deserve powerful mathematics. We reject ideas of natural gifts and talents. That's one bullet point in the framework. The belief that we treat everyone the same is insufficient. Active efforts in mathematics teaching are required in order to counter the cultural forces that have led to and continue to perpetuate current inequalities. So that means if you're not good at math, it's not your fault, or it's not, you know, you don't have some problems with your aptitude. It's actually the fault of the kids who are smarter at math. And it's, as I say, it's not out of mediocrity. Yeah. It's real.
This is destined to be very destructive. And I always start thinking about, what's their motivation? Why are they doing this? Do they do this because they're leaders of the country and they have authority now and they're just really stupid and shouldn't be telling other people how to live? Or is there a conspiracy that we would like to bring this system down? And I think there's some of each of that. There are some people who think that the system ought to come down because then if we believe in a pure economic socialist system, that we'll be able to do it if we can bring it crashing down. But I keep thinking about all this, you would think that equality sounds like a wonderful term, but it is a very, very dangerous term. Equality is, when you think equality will take care of us, it really eliminates liberty. Because if you look at a world, and all of history, individuals are important, and they should be able to make their own choices. You know, they're supposed to be pro-choice, but they can't do this. The equality business, I keep thinking, what would be a good example of that? Well, I think that there's something very unfair about sports.
Yeah.
You know, why should these big guys get to play basketball? The tall guys have this advantage. I think it should be made equal.
That's right.
We have to have equality in sports, equality in football, equality in track. That would be exciting, wouldn't it? And everybody, but nobody would come. It would be sort of like nobody comes to an election in Russia or Soviet Union.
Yeah.
Well, everybody will come because you're all equal. Oh, 98% of the people came out and voted. So, but here, this equality stuff, but they're getting it mixed up with equal justice.
Yeah.
Equal justice is what they ignore because they don't give you equal justice by forcing this system of equality and punishing people who might be becoming less equal and better informed. So, but it also points out the imperfections of government schools too, because it's the government schools that are the most ruthless in following some of this progressive stuff, and that is also the reason why private education and homeschooling is growing, because people are starting to realize. And the other thing is the control of so much of this is the control by the unions. The unions, the teachers' unions, have done a lot to make this stay-at-home problem much, much worse. So the teachers' unions have a lot to do with it, with this too. And I don't know. I think they just think they're smarter than everybody else. They're the group that probably think they're smarter, but they really aren't. But they've been indoctrinated. The indoctrination control is there, and it starts very early on. It starts in our early schools, but it certainly is pumped up by, it's almost like the better named school you go to, it might be the worse information you're getting.
Yeah, the other thing that this California framework about mathematics says is that the smarter, the brighter kids in mathematics shouldn't take calculus in 12th grade, because it's not fair to the other ones who are not at that level, which is insane, because I took calculus in 12th grade because there was literally nothing else for me to take. I'd taken everything to that point. And actually, it was very helpful because it showed me that although I was pretty advanced at school, math was not my thing because I didn't excel. I learned a lot from it, but I didn't excel. And it led me to a wiser career choice than mathematics. But the other part of this framework is full of this social justice garbage. And let's put up this next clip. If we can, I'll just read a little bit from this one because it's a long clip. This is from the Reason article. The entire second chapter of the framework is a mathematics framework, is about connecting math to social justice concepts like bias and racism. Here's a quote from it. teachers can support discussions that center mathematical reasoning rather than issues of status and bias by intentionally defining what it means to do and learn mathematics together in ways that include and highlight the languages, identities, and practices of historically marginalized communities. What that means in English is if these guys are successful, bridges and buildings are going to start falling down because people aren't going to study real math, they're going to study social justice math, and we're going to end up in the scene in Idiocracy where the shot pulls out and you see the entire city has collapsed because nobody knows how to keep it up because we've lost the ability to keep it. This is where we're heading, and it's not even funny.
Yeah, it's horrible. But this whole idea that math, they've decided it's racist.
Racist.
Now, that is weird. Well, it is. You know, those people that we helped out from Vietnam, they come over here and they always excel in math. Yeah. You know, they become engineers and all these things. And then they wonder why we're less competitive. You know, it's never any of responsibility on ourselves. Individuals to advance have to be honest with themselves and admit what they can and can't do and admit when they come up short. But a country, if you do that, you're unpatriotic. Yeah. You say, where do we come up short? But we are coming up short on competing, you know, let's say with China. And it never can be because of maybe some of this nonsense going on. Well, you know, yes, China has some problems, and they're more socialistic and more sympathetic to communism. But what about if they're communists? They shouldn't be doing so well. But what we do is we punish the people who might compete with them. Then they say, well, it's all their fault. Yeah. Of course, it's all China's fault because they have all our money because we sent it to them and took their stuff. Yeah. You know, so it's people don't want to look at it in a more honest fashion. And the one thing that I'm aware of, and I try to watch it, because people don't want to have their country bad-mouthed. But I think there's been so many good things. If you look at our entire history, you know, there's some very good things. Just because we've drifted away doesn't mean we're bad-mouthing them. But if we're starting wars that we don't need to start, and if we have a monetary system that wasn't part of our history, I mean, there's so many things that were very good in our history. But now they say that if you do that, I ran across this when I talked about foreign policy, you know, at one time. Yeah. Oh, you're un-American, you're unpatriotic, you hate the military and all this kind of stuff. So I think the most we can do, if anybody else has ever faced this type of thing, you know, all you have to do is do your best to tell the truth and try to convert people and try to persuade people to move in the direction of a society that's based on liberty.
Yes. Well, I'm going to close out with an example of both hypocrisy and pandemic theater. And this is the Bidens went to visit the Carters. I think it was yesterday. And the Carters, President Carter made some big mistakes as president. We know that. And one of them was having Brzezinski as his national security advisor. But I think everyone would agree that in his retirement, he's actually made a huge difference in favor of peace and helping impoverished people. And he's probably the best ex-president that we've had. But the Bidens stopped in for a visit. They went out to Georgia. And let's put on this clip. This is a tweet that someone noticed and pointed out. It's very, very important, I think. Inside, near the elderly, no masks. And you can't see that whole picture. It's cropped. But there's Joe and Mrs. Carter. And then there's Jill and Mr. Carter, President Carter. And then on the right, same trip. You can see the outfit's the same. Inside, near the elderly, no masks. Outside, near no one, masks. So when they know that they're going to be photographed in the open, they put those masks on, even though they were near anyone. And the first pictures were released by the Carter Center. That was when they're inside, right next to elderly people, put those masks on.
You know, they might see our program and they might think they should apologize for making that mistake.
I think they will.
Just a careless mistake.
I'm sure they will.
I want to close by emphasizing what I think the purpose of government ought to be, because we're told that the sole purpose by the progressives is equality. Everybody has to be equal. But I proved the point that that doesn't make any sense, because if you did that in athletics would be pretty boring. Nobody would participate. They'd have to do it in the underground economy in order to play your sports and find out who can run the fastest. So, but anyway, what is the purpose? If you're not fighting for equality, everybody wants equality. It should be equality, equal justice, equality under justice. The justice system had to be equal for everybody. And that will take care of a lot of problems. It won't solve all the problems because man is imperfect. But I think the goal of government should not be, and it is never was in our early history, the goal of our government is not the goal of the Constitution. It's not democracy. It's not perfect equality, any of these things. The main goal of the Constitution was intended to be the promotion of liberty for all individuals equally. And it was very imperfect at the beginning of our founding. But the emphasis on liberty has advanced, but it always comes up short. But this whole thing, I think we're backtracking a bit now when we say, well, we want perfect equality. Everybody has the same thing of everything. Well, that's sort of treating people like they're cows in a field. Yes, we're going to treat you equally. We're going to put you in this fence, and everybody gets the same amount of food. And then when you're fat and lazy, then we're going to butcher you. And that's what happens if you do that and you become fearful. And then the bureaucrats and the politicians can come along and you're scared to death because you've been so used to being fed on time. You say, well, whatever you do, we'll do what you want. But, you know, when the slaughter comes, and right now, I think that's what we should be concerned about, because the slaughter is the total destruction of our liberty, and it comes along with the destruction of the economy. So I want to thank all our viewers today for tuning in, and please come back to the Liberty Report soon.